The mountain itself seemed to take a breath as if the fiery life force that once empowered the behemoth was now extinguished.
Mana flow is stabilizing!
Adele called out, her sword still aglow with residual holy light.
It's over! We've done it! We still need help back here!
Pristina shouted.
We can't hold them much longer!
Earthmage, Nick began, but the maid reminded him who she was.
Clarissa!
Clarissa, make us a wall that breaks the monsters up so we can run, Nick told her.
That'll destroy the way out!
She objected as she looked at him with concern. Just do it. I'll get us out of here, he promised her. With that assurance, she did exactly as she was told, exploding the dirt outward to provide relief for Pristina and the two spearmen. As the ground erupted, the sides of the narrow path blowing up and pushing the monsters off as the whole path was destroyed, Pristina and the spearmen backed up as quickly as they could, but still it wasn't fast enough to escape the collapsing terrain, and they started to fall. I got you, Nick said as he ran forward to grab them. But Siowa and Alan were already there, helping all three of them get to safety.
All right, what now?
Clarissa asked.
Yeah, what's the plan?
Siowa said, turning to Nick. We go through that, Nick said, pointing at the mountain. What? Someone said as the whole group blinked almost in unison. We don't have time to find a jagged trail, and we have an earth mage and plenty of muscle. We're going through the side of the mountain, Nick told them, raising the standard of greatness once more as he cast pep talk on the group. We can do this. It's just earth and stone. We can break through it. We can shatter this barrier and reach the portal.
Let me guess. We're on rear duty?
Pristina remarked with a sigh as the group saw the claw of a monster climbing up at the edge of the makeshift boss arena. No. Topaz, you cover our backs. Nick ordered as the mace man rushed forward, unleashing a powerful strike that exploded the mountain wall in front of them, shattering it into pieces and carving out a straight 30-foot path in front of them, right through the mountain and toward the portal.
This is the last one I've got left!
Topaz informed him as she lobbed a single concoction behind them before unequipping her launcher altogether. A smoke grenade burst, obscuring their trail. Great. Arnold, take this. Nick said, tossing him the recently earned Maul of Afterburn. What's you? Oh! Arnold's eyes lit up as he took the hammer and followed the mace wielder, the two unleashing attack after attack, the ground exploding twice from Arnold's hit as the physical attack was followed up shortly after with a giant burst of flame.
I don't have the mana to help. I'm burnt out.
Clarissa informed them as she just watched the two work, hammering through the mountain like they were John Henry racing the machine. Nick also wanted to step in and assist, worrying that his pep talk skill wasn't enough, but the tunnel they were smashing through the mountain wasn't wide enough for more than two to work on it at a time, so even he left the work to the two strongest members of the party. After what felt like an eternity, Nick wondering if he had pointed them in the right direction, if they had gone off course, or if something else had happened, the wall exploded one last time, revealing the portal just ahead of them. Go! 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 Nick shouted as he hurried everyone through the portal. A second later, they found themselves stumbling back into the guild compound they'd left. For a moment, they stood there, panting, battered. But they were alive. Nick looked at his team, their faces streaked with dirt and sweat, and felt a surge of pride. They had faced the abyss and returned victorious. Then he saw what was left of the guild compound. Nick's boots crunched over the scorched remnants of what used to be the guild's defensive interior. His eyes, still adjusting to the harsh light of day after the dungeon's dim purple light, took in the chaos that surrounded them. With the battle over and the monsters defeated, he could finally see what had transpired. The entire guild compound had been destroyed by the attack. The walls had been obliterated by explosives and earthquakes. More than a dozen dungeon divers lay dead, victims of the cultist and monster attacks, and everything else was left in ruins. What did survive were the adventurers that hadn't followed them in, Will, Father Pietro and his priests, and the few remaining guards that had lived through the initial chaos, all waiting and watching as Nick and the others stepped back into the world.
The light around you is quite bright, but I sense from your expression that this is not over. I am old, and my bones ache too much to chase after you. But we will try. Where are we going next? The old priest asked.
I don't know where we're going, but I'm out of canisters.
Topaz said as she tossed several blue potions to everyone who had just left the dungeon.
Drink up. It's going to be on you guys to do the heavy lifting.
Well, the rifle needs maintenance, but I still have my mech arm, Alan noted. The roads are too busted up to drive on, we'll inform them. But I got on the communications and got a map for the best route to Eternal Frosthold. And I also got those, he said, pointing to a few rickshaws in the distance, their drivers already busy loading up injured people onto their seats.
Wow.
Great work, Nick told him, admiring how he had found a way to help even when he couldn't fight.
Thanks. I'm going to stay here and work with them and the priests to help pick up the injured and take them to the hospital. If you need me, boss, use this, he added, tossing Nick a handheld CB radio. I'll be with you as fast as I can.
I appreciate it, Nick told him, looking at the CB radio as well as the map.
All right, Nick said after half a minute, downing the mana potion Topaz had handed him. We gotta move. We could have guildmates hurt, and we have no time to wait. It doesn't look like it's far from here. So if we move now, we could be there before the boss pops its ugly head out.
All depends on how many waves appear, Nick informed them.
Well then what the hell are we waiting for? Let's move!
The mace wielder who had shattered the last wall earlier said before chugging his potion. Nick blinked for a second, having only expected his team to join him, but he wasn't one to turn down help.
Thanks.
It's Oliver, the mace wielder answered quickly, his hand held out. As Nick shook it, he added,
Thanks for the support, Oliver.
We have this here, Father Pietro assured him. Go. They need you.
We'll do, Nick told him.
Do what now? Will asked, misunderstanding Nick's words.
Nothing. Let's go. Stay with me. We're going to be moving fast, Nick said to Will, unequipping everything he could into his inventory before sprinting off down the road toward the Eternal Frosthold dungeon, the others following behind him.
I'll help anyone who falls behind find their way,
the archer said as he saw Nick turning back to check and make sure the group was keeping up with him.
I know this city like the back of my hand. Just focus on getting there.
Thanks, Nick yelled his reply.
Even with all of the deaths, the destruction, the shattered cell towers, his aching muscles, the pounding headache from mana exhaustion that Topaz's potion wasn't curing fast enough, and the fear that he might lose someone important to him still gripping his heart, he couldn't stop running. The more they relied on him, the more they followed him, the more he knew he could not let them down. If he faltered now, everything would fall apart.
You can do this,
he told himself as he rounded a corner, jumping over the broken holes in the concrete before running across the hood of a Toyota blocking the sidewalk.
You have to do this.
Chapter 29
What the hell is going on?
Siowa asked as the group ran through the city. The level of destruction was far greater than Nick had anticipated when he first laid out his plan to stop the Red Death. Smashed cars from the shockwave of explosions littered the area. There were severed power lines across their path, broken glass along the sidewalks, and the sporadic flashing of emergency lights and systems that could function on battery power as Nick and the others ran through the city. Topaz struggled to keep up with everyone else as she took in all the destruction.
How? Just how many explosives did they make? How did they have the time and opportunity to plant them all? How did they even do this?
It really isn't that hard. Just ask Nick. He's got plenty of experience blowing up buildings, Alan remarked, sniping at Nick.
What?
He does? Oliver asked.
I mean, I do know how to make explosives, Nick replied with a shrug as the group cautiously rounded a corner.
Don't think I forgot about what you did to Mom's restaurant, Alan jabbed. And then, when Nick turned his head to look at him, Alan laughed.
I'm just teasing.
I'm so amused. Nick responded, sighing. He had thought for a moment his friend held a grudge he hadn't known about.
Watch out!
Siowa yelled, pointing upward as a section of a nearby tower teetered precariously like it was about to fall right on them.
Left! Now!
Nick's order came just in time, the team veering away as the structure collapsed behind them, sending up a cloud of dust and debris.
Stay close. We'll get through this, together,
Nick told the people following him, doing his best to keep their spirits up as they were forced to face the aftermath of the terrorist attack face to face.
You know, at least there don't seem to be any people around. It seems like everyone must have fled to a shelter when the chaos started,
Alan noted as they ran past another destroyed building, the lack of bodies all over the place serving as evidence of his statement.
That's true, Nick concurred.
People must have started running the moment they heard the first explosive go off.
You jinxed it!
Siowa snapped, pointing ahead. There, off a side street, two men and a woman were fighting a monstrous serpent that had broken out of one of the dungeons. Nick began to put together a plan.
All right, let's get to them. We need to—
Nick, our team is still at Frosthold. We can't delay,
Alan said, stressing the urgency.
What happens if one of them dies because we take our time here?
I don't know.
Nick froze for a moment, but that was all it took for him to realize the answer.
But I do know we're going to help those people.
Alan shook his head.
But Elizabeth and—
Elizabeth is one of the best warriors we know. Those people, however, will die if we don't help them.
They're gonna die, and anyone they're protecting is gonna die too, and that's not something I can live with. So you can go rescue Elizabeth, but I trust her. I'm going to rescue the people right in front of my eyes,
Nick said as his feet carried him the remaining distance to the snake monster. He hadn't stopped or broken his pace at all as he rushed to the fight. Alan wasn't wrong, though. They still needed to make it to the Eternal Frosthold dungeon, and taking the detour to fight these monsters only guaranteed they'd take that much longer.
Christina, Arnold, let's flank it, Nick commanded as he arrived on the scene of the fight. Topaz, Adele, Alan, high ground, keep its attention.
What about us? The mace man asked. What can we do? Yeah, I'm with Oliver. What do you want us to do?
The archer asked too. Nick's brain short-circuited for a minute. He hadn't expected anyone outside his guild to expect orders from him, but he wasn't going to refuse free help.
All right. You and the two spearmen come with me, Christina and Arnold. Keep it flanked on all sides. Have the mages and the archer take the high ground with Topaz. Adele and the two swordsmen can go with them too. Keep them safe.
I still don't have any canisters,
Topaz reminded Nick, pointing out that she had used her last one in the previous dungeon and was now relegated to just her sword and shield.
Then you're on duty with us. Get up here,
Nick told her as he watched her rush forward with a drawn sword while the two mages, the archer Adele and Alan, climbed a pile of rubble to secure an advantageous point. Meanwhile, the contingent of melee troops circled around the large monster in front of the broken-down, blown-up bakery, weapons ready to strike. As they approached, Nick saw the monstrous creature rise 15 feet off the ground, its body coiled and ready to strike as it hissed menacingly, its eyes fixed on the two men in office attire and the baker who valiantly stood their ground against it. One of the men wielded a broken metal pipe, swinging it with determination, while the other man's hands glowed as he created a magic shield to protect them. The woman, her bakery apron stained with dust and sweat, brandished a glowing rolling pin. As they approached, Nick called out to the trio,
"We're here to help!"
His voice cut through the chaos, bringing a moment of relief to the beleaguered fighters. The man with the pipe glanced back briefly, his eyes widening in surprise at the sight of armed reinforcements. Nick rushed forward with his standard, using charge as he smashed into the serpent, whose head was the size of a VW beetle, just before it could strike and eat the poor baker girl whole. The blow was barely enough to budge the base of the beast, forcing it to slide a paltry 2 feet back from the impact, but it was still enough to get its attention as the snake whirled its head to face Nick as it coiled up again. Nick's mind raced, processing each movement of the creature, each shift in his team's formation. The giant serpent saw Alan and Adele's movement and tried to slither towards them, coiling as if to strike, but Arnold was already there with the Maul of Afterburn in his hands as he rushed up behind the creature. As Arnold struck the snake, drawing out a sharp hiss of pain, Adele created a blinding burst of light that further stunned the slithering beast. Alan, the archers, and the mages quickly attacked, firing elemental projectiles and magic at the writhing monster. The sound of weapon fire echoed through the streets. The creature hissed in fury as it swung its massive head back and forth, teeth gnashing at the air before it blindly lunged towards the nearest target, Christina, who had been right in front of the snake, opposite Arnold. As it tried to bite Christina, the quick-reacting fencer raised her shield, the fangs smashing into the metal instead of flesh. However, the impact from the attack was still great enough to pierce through the shield, and the weight of the attack flattened her into the ground, a sickening crunch and a small scream escaping her as one of Christina's legs buckled the wrong way under the weight.
Adele! Christina needs healing!
Nick called out as he rushed forward with his standard, striking the monster again and knocking back the blinded beast. He followed up by unequipping his shield and using his newly freed arm to easily scoop Christina up in one hand as he rushed toward Adele. The serpent didn't relent, though. Its body uncurled as its tail shot out and struck one of the spearmen, sending him flying back and into the wall behind him.
Don't risk it! We can run!
Nick heard the baker yell as she rushed over to the injured spearman, her hands reaching into her inventory to pull out a cookie that she shoved into his mouth. The injured man choked a little as he chewed the dessert, but his injury started to visibly heal. With a guttural hiss, the serpent lunged forward, its jaws gaping wide to swallow Nick and Christina whole. In a split-second decision, Nick managed to twist his body just enough to bring up his standard in a desperate defense. The creature's fangs clashed against the cold metal of the weapon, the sharp-pointed halberd head of the standard catching the roof of its mouth. A loud, pained hiss filled the air as the serpent recoiled, its massive form thrashing wildly. Nick could feel the sheer strength of the beast as it tried to break free from his weapon's hold.
Pin it!
Siowa shouted as she and the spearmen rushed towards the group, their spears held high. They charged at the monster, stabbing and thrusting their weapons towards the creature's vulnerable areas, restricting its ability to move and pull away. The creature thrashed and writhed under the onslaught of attacks, but together, Nick, Siowa, and the spearmen pinned the giant snake to the side of a building before it could strike again. In that moment, there was a sudden flash of light as Oliver leapt into the air, his weapon held high with both hands. The air around him crackled with energy as he came down and swung the mace with all his might. The force of the blow echoed through the air like a thunderclap as the serpent's head rocked back from the impact, scales cracking beneath the mace's relentless assault. Arnold appeared on the other side of the creature, his glowing maul arcing down. The weapon connected, a fiery explosion cracking a second later as he crushed the head of the injured serpent completely.
"Adele, how long to heal her?" Nick asked as he reached the party's priestess.
I need 2 minutes. 3, tops.
Adele answered as Nick laid Christina down in front of her, finally getting a good look at the fighter's broken shinbone.
"Then that's how long you will have," Nick promised her, taking in a deep breath as he looked around, frowning a little at how messed up his standard looked with the snake blood all over it.
They still had a good 4 or 5 minutes of straight running to reach the Eternal Frosthold dungeon, so this would put them 7 minutes out at best.
"But what about Frosthold?" Alan asked.
"Can you heal while running?" Nick asked, hating that he had to ask.
"If someone else holds her, yeah. You've put me through worse in training,"
Adele replied with a laugh.
"I've been healing during squad fights while moving and in combat since training started."
"I'll carry her and try to keep her steady. You keep her healed," Arnold offered as he reached the two of them, his face grimacing as he saw Christina's broken bone.
"Open wide,"
Topaz said, not even asking Christina for permission as she forcefully poured a weird purple liquid down the injured woman's throat.
"There, now you just need a minute at most."
"Great. Let's move then," Nick said.
The three fighters in work attire approached, the baker having finished healing the injured spearman.
"I can come with you guys, if you're going to save more people. Are you?"
asked the baker, whose name tag read Betty.
"Yeah, but are you sure?"
Nick asked, raising an eyebrow. They didn't look like the type that would fight if it wasn't necessary.
"Yeah. If we sit around and do nothing, then more people will end up dying, just like we would have if you all hadn't shown up. But I'm too scared to fight on my own,"
Betty admitted.
"I'm embarrassed to say it, but I am too. I want to help others, but I can't do it on my own. I haven't been a dungeon diver for 5 years," one of the two men in suits said.
"Same," the other added.
"Clock's ticking, Nick. We need to go," Alan urged.
"Right. Okay, if you guys are coming, then let's move out," Nick said.
"All right. Then no more stops. Let's get..."
"Alan, we're stopping if we see someone that needs it. Life is life. You have to trust Elizabeth. You have to trust the training,"
Nick told him, drawing his line clearly in the sand. Even though he could tell as he spoke the words that Alan was furious about the idea of leaving the other members on their own for even a moment longer, the artificer just pursed his lips like he was holding back something important and nodded.
"Fine," he said.
"Good. Let's move,"
Nick replied before turning to the archer.
"Can you help the stragglers so they don't get lost?"
"Got you, boss,"
the archer nodded before the group tore off toward the Eternal Frosthold dungeon. Nick, swallowing his anxieties, he tried to focus on the mission ahead. He could already hear screaming in the distance, indications that there would be yet another detour fight to help someone. Honestly, he had the same doubts as Alan, and he could tell everyone from the guild was just as worried as he was. But he knew what he had come to New Smithstead to do, to save lives. If he turned his back on anyone, even a single person, he'd never forgive himself.
All right, you hear that screaming? Get us a visual. We may have to make another stop,
Nick shouted as he looked to Alan to send a drone ahead, cursing himself as he did it.
I don't have the gall to make the sacrifices a leader needs to make. I can't be like Maria used to be,
he admitted to himself, hating that he couldn't just leave these strangers to their fate and go save his people.
Chapter 30
Move! We can't let this slow us down,
Nick insisted, ignoring the notifications for XP as he pulled the sharp head of his standard out of yet another monster they'd killed. The group had stopped three more times to save civilians and weaker dungeon divers caught by raging monsters in the city. It was the right thing to do, but with each delay, Nick worried more and more about his own people and how they were doing against the monsters on the front lines of this fight. The sound of the people they'd just saved thanking them faded as they ran on towards the Eternal Frosthold dungeon, but four more adventurers had joined the cause, refusing to not do their part.
Right here,
Arnold called out, his voice cutting through the sound of loud footsteps and the rushing of wind in Nick's ears as he and the others ran as hard as they could. They veered sharply, almost colliding with an overturned taxi, its horn still blaring as it called out for its missing owner.
Watch it!
Adele cried, yanking Alan back just as a chunk of concrete plummeted where he'd been a heartbeat earlier.
Keep up! We can't afford to lose anyone!
Nick bellowed, his voice starting to get hoarse. In his mind, the image of Elizabeth and the others, surrounded by threats at Eternal Frosthold, spurred him on.
Remember the plan, he thought. Reach the dungeon, secure the perimeter, and control the outbreak.
But doubt gnawed at him, a persistent whisper that questioned if they would make it in time.
Nick, that way is blocked!
Topaz shouted, pointing to where the earlier cult-created explosions had caused a building to collapse and spill its guts across their path.
What the hell? Nick cursed. Is there a way around this?
This way!
Betty the baker yelled, pointing to a route south of them.
I've done deliveries here a million times, just trust me!
With her help, they darted through three more alleyways, cutting their time even more than if they had stayed on the original path until they could finally see their destination. The moment Nick and his team came within a few blocks of the Eternal Frosthold dungeon, the scenery shifted. Dark storm clouds gathered in the sky overhead, and the wind continued to pick up strength and speed. Nick's crown of the mountaintop glowed as the terrain was so cold that the stat bonuses it imparted doubled. It was hard to imagine they were in the same city as Nick saw a frozen wasteland in front of them, drawn out in shades of blue and white. Buildings that had survived the explosions now stood frozen, looking like they were held up by the walls of ice that had begun to form around them, buttressing them. Storefronts lay in disarray, shattered, their merchandise strewn across the streets. Snow covered the pavement, and the jagged edges of icicles clung to every surface. Frozen bodies like eerie sculptures lay scattered about, their faces etched with expressions of anguish and despair. Nick's heart sank as he took in the grim view. The sight of the frozen bodies left a bitter taste in his mouth, as he wondered if he had come sooner, if he had been faster, whether they'd have died. There was a thundering rumble, and Nick looked up at the sky. The dark cloud seemed to be expanding, stretching like a malevolent icy hand that would grasp the city.
Nick, I don't see Elizabeth and the others. Where are they?
Siowop panicked as the group looked around, trying to find the entrance of the dungeon where they anticipated Team Hippogriffs to be.
And what the heck is going on with this cold?
Alan, the thinnest of the group, asked as he took a vial from Topaz, who was handing out strange, white liquid vials.
It's the dungeon, Nick said, still looking for the red portal.
As long as the portal is open, there won't be an end to the ice pouring into this world. Is it the ice going out of the portal, or the heat from our world rushing into it? Alan asked.
Nick, your turn. Down the hatch.
Topaz told him, pushing a vial into his mouth as he tilted his head back and drank the contents. The effect was instant. His body immediately went from chittering and chattering to feeling as warm as if he were in front of a fireplace in a log cabin, snuggled under a blanket, sipping a cup of hot chocolate.
Whoa. That's the stuff,
Nick remarked to Topaz.
Thanks. You're a lifesaver.
No problem. I always carry a ton of these in my alchemist potion pocket, just in case. Glad I did, too. But,
She looked back at the rest of the group. Between the five divers they had picked up at their own dungeon, the three they had rescued when they first began their journey to the Frosthold dungeon, and the nine more they had picked up along the way, they had a lot more bodies to account for than anyone would have expected. It had gone from a six-person party to a raid group of more than 20.
"You have enough for everyone?" Nick asked as Topaz failed to finish her thought.
"Yeah, just... it costs me a lot. These aren't always cheap to make. Should we take names while handing them out?"
"Don't mention the cost when people could be dying,"
Nick shot back, trying not to yell as he was frustrated such a question could even be asked. Every helping hand was important, and a little money wasn't something he had in short supply.
"Just keep them all alive and healthy. I'm trusting you on this one."
He put a hand on her shoulder.
"You and Adele are the only two I can rely on to keep this group functioning."
"Thanks,"
Topaz said, looking away from Nick's gaze as she then turned back to the group, rushing to complete her job.
"All right, we need to reach the portal and find Elizabeth, but we don't know what lies ahead. If you were going to turn back, now is the time to do it," Nick told the group, giving one last out for those with them.
"If you're so pressed for time, get a move on, we're with you,"
Oliver yelled from the back of the group, where he had been playing Vanguard.
"Hell yeah we are, Team Dragons,"
Clarissa yelled, borrowing the name she had likely heard them mention more than once as they tried to cheer each other up.
"Team Dragons!"
Nick nodded and then led the way forward, rushing past the frozen buildings into the guild compound. The moment they entered the compound, making it past the large walls of ice and concrete that surrounded the portal, the still frozen world around them shattered into absolute chaos as they were greeted by the sounds of battle, metal smashing through icy monsters, shields ringing under an endless hail of spells and ice shards, and the ceaseless cackling of imps as the tiny creatures continued to mock and laugh as they attacked. Behind all the chaos, Nick could see the red dimensional portal glowing brightly as it continued to unleash a wave of monsters on the defenders.
"Glacial hoppers, ice shard wisps, and frostling imps," Nick noted, instantly recognizing the creatures that had haunted his dreams more than once within the apocalypse.
The glacial hoppers, rabbit-like monsters made of ice and snow, were especially awful as they often preferred going out of their way to run down and hunt weaker people like Nick had been.
"There they are! Team Hippogriffs!"
Alan shouted, relief washing over the whole group as he pointed at Elizabeth, Noelle, Robert, and Winter, who were fighting side by side, spears stabbing out between their nearly touching shields as they acted as the bulwark against the advancing monsters on the right side of the portal.
"Push them back now, for New Smithstard!"
A 7-foot-tall man wearing furred leather armor shouted as he commanded a group of similarly dressed adventurers, fighting side by side with Elizabeth and the others. On the left side of the portal, Nick could see Reggie and Spencer doing their best to hold out as well. Reggie swung his long, fire-coated Zweihänder again and again, stopping only to refresh his orange, absorb-one-hit shield spell. Spencer, behind him, was doing his best to assist with defense, creating a fiery barrier that melted many of the ice monsters on their side of the portal. Arnold, seeing his sister and the others struggle, reacted first as he ran into the thickest of the fight, his maul glowing with a fiery aura as he tore through monsters.
"All right, this is what we came for," Nick yelled as he hoisted his standard into the air. "These are the monsters that are destroying the city! Let's put these beasts down and pay them back for the chaos they've caused."
Nick could feel his mana drain as he watched the pep talk spell wash over his 22 companions.
"My life fire!"
Christina yelled, quoting her favorite game once more as she and the others charged into the fray behind Arnold.
"I'll handle the injured."
Adele, who had her weapons out like she was going to charge into the fight too, called out as she sprinted towards a fallen adventurer instead of the monsters. She knelt, her gloved hands pulsing with a warm golden light as she assessed his wounds and worked to save his life.
"Nick!"
Sioa called out over the din of battle, her voice as sharp as the ice shards raining from the sky.
"We need to flank them on the right!"
"Got it!"
he shouted back, already calculating their best approach.
"Alan, lead any archers or ranged fighters and take out those wisps. Anyone with healing spells, help Adele. Anyone, I need traps for the hoppers. Something to slow them down,"
Nick shouted, his words punctuated by the crackle of ice underfoot.
"I got you, boss,"
Clarissa called back, She started to chant, her hands glowing as a sticky black sludge began to bubble up from the ground and spread across the battlefield.
"Everyone else is with me!"
Nick ordered as he charged toward the nearest cluster of hoppers.
"Nick! Behind you!"
Alan shouted. His warning came just in time. Nick pivoted, the long shaft of his standard whirling as he slammed it into the two impish creatures that had used some short-distance speed skill to appear right next to him. Even as the metal pole of the standard struck them, one of the creatures still managed to aim and fire off a bolt of blue which hit Nick's left leg. A chilling cold started to spread through the limb, but a moment later, his crown glowed and the chill faded as if it had never been, the ice magic absorbed by the item.
"Got him!"
one of the recently rescued divers yelled as he sliced through the imps in midair with his katana.
"Elizabeth, we're pushing them back on our side, coordinating with—"
Nick's voice was snatched away by a strong gust of wind, but he could see Elizabeth nodding.
"Keep pressure on the left flank, and watch for the imps. They're small, but nasty,"
Spencer shouted to his own team, magic swirling around his hands as he prepared another spell.
"Is that all you've got?"
Sioa taunted the monsters as she stabbed one right through the heart, pinning it to the ground before using her boot to step on the monster and hold it in place as she pulled out the spear tip. It was hard to focus in all the chaos. One thing happened after the other so quickly Nick couldn't take it all in. There were too many pieces on the board, and Nick was forced to focus on his own fight as he pushed forward. Topaz defended Nick's left side, her shield taking the icy attack of a monster before she cut it down with her sword, and one of the swordsmen who had fought with him at Terraquake Mountain defended his right. The other melee fighters spread out, covering each other's flanks, and bashed, stabbed, and slashed the icy creatures that swarmed around them. One of the spearmen they'd picked up took an ice shard to his face, blinding him and making him drop his weapon as he instinctively reached up towards his eyes. Two glacial rabbits hit him as he struggled, their icy claws cutting through his pants and the flesh of his legs and dropping him to the ground. Oliver's mace crushed the two creatures a moment later, saving the spearman's life as Betty reached the man just in time to save him from death's embrace, shoving what looked like a glowing croissant in his mouth to begin the healing as one of their companions pulled him to safety.
"Nick, we can't keep this up forever!"
Adele called out from off to his right, where she was desperately healing one of the divers, and Nick instantly saw what the issue was. The time she was spending rushing between the injured.
"Okay, I need two or three people on medic duty. Bring the injured to Adele or Betty. The lines will hold. We'll hold them with or without you. But we don't have enough healers to have them waste time legging it across the battlefield,"
Nick ordered as he looked over at the exhausted Adele and Betty one more time.
"I got it," Alan replied, the first to volunteer.
"I'll play medic for this side. I'm nearly out of mana,"
Spencer informed Nick as he chugged a blue potion before grabbing an injured man and pulling him back to Betty.
"I'll take this side for now. I'll get someone to switch with me when my mana's back. Everyone, hold your ground!"
Nick roared, rallying his team as they stood shoulder to shoulder with Elizabeth's. Their combined numbers and might completely stopped the tide that had previously threatened to spill past the defenders and into the city.
"That's it. We've almost defeated the wave. One more push!"
Nick urged as he lunged forward with a rapid thrust. The sharp halberd tip of his standard pierced through the icy body of one of the hoppers, killing it instantly, and Sioa struck down a wisp nearby in the same moment. Enemy after enemy fell to his guild's blades and spells. Nick felt a surge of pride for his team, his family, fighting with every ounce of their strength as they kept the city safe and the adventurers alive. They had stopped the wave, and as he noticed the bodies of the dead cultists on the ground, he couldn't help but feel like he and his friends had, at least a little bit, stopped the fiendish plans of the bastards who had wanted to destroy everyone.
"So you guys managed to get them before they could hurt too many of the other divers?"
Sioa asked as she kicked one of the corpses, the frozen body cracking from the impact.
"They burned one or two people first. But yeah, we killed them,"
Spencer replied.
"If the priests that were supposed to stay with us hadn't run like cowards the moment the portal broke, they might have been able to save them."
"Cowards, indeed,"
Elizabeth snarled, audible hatred in her voice.
"If they fear death to the point of turning their backs on the living, they are not fit to wear the cloth,"
Adele lamented, taking a moment to stop what she was doing as she spat on the ground.
"Hey, no party poopers! We won!"
Reggie shouted triumphantly.
"Another wave bites the dust,"
he added as he did a small dance where he stood.
"We did it! We beat them!
Another dungeon, another win!
Oliver was practically throwing Clarissa into the sky as he tossed her into the air triumphantly.
We won!
The archer shouted. Nick could hear the declarations of victory from the Eternal Frosthold Guild and surviving adventurers.
Drink your healing potions if you have them! Recuperate until the next wave!
Elizabeth shouted, though the order only mildly dampened the jovial mood.
For those who just arrived, this isn't the end! That portal keeps generating monsters!
Nick stood amid the icy ruins, his breath misting in the frigid air as his eyes scanned the macabre landscape. The once bustling city was now a frozen graveyard of monstrous corpses. Glacial hoppers lay entombed in their own frost. Puffs of smoke marked the spots where dead ice wisps had dissipated, and the imps were reduced to ice sculptures that crumbled at the slightest touch.
Hey, by the way, where's Maria and everyone else?
Alan asked as he looked around, not seeing the teammates who were headed to the dungeon long before Nick's group.
Huh? You didn't hear? They called to tell us they were on their way, but the Abyssal Knight team sent out a distress call, Reggie answered.
We figured if the Abyssal Knights were calling us for help, it must have been real bad, so we told Maria's team to head that way instead. I knew we could handle this, or... I thought we could. The waves weren't that tough at first. The first round of monsters was a breeze.
And now it's what? A full-on winter storm?
Topaz asked, laughing as she pulled out some more of the weatherproofing vials for the people from the other teams.
That's one way to put it.
Elizabeth shrugged.
Well, damn. Did we hear anything from the others? We were inside a dungeon and didn't get any reception.
Nick said, worried about the other teams. If the Abyssal Knights had such a bad situation that they needed to send out a distress call for aid, that was an ominous sign.
Yeah, we got word from Jennifer and Lou. They finished their dungeons and went to tackle two of the other ones. They said they'd join us as soon as they wrapped that up, but given how the cultists have tried to kill them...
Reggie frowned, his words trailing off.
Yeah, there is something deeply unsettling about seeing a man burn alive.
I can still hear the screams. For some reason, I think just being eaten would have been better, Robert told Reggie, putting a hand on his shoulder. But don't worry. The cultists got theirs, too.
Yeah, they got theirs,
Reggie nodded somberly.
All right, enough of that. As long as you managed to quell the situation before it became uncontrollable, that's the best we could have hoped for,
Nick said as he turned to the people around him, stabbing his standard into the ground next to him so he could point more easily.
Alan, work with Topaz and anyone else with a crafter skill to rebuild the fortifications.
Who elected you as leader?
One of the people Nick didn't recognize said, stepping up and puffing out his chest as much as the metal armor he was wearing would allow.
I did, Oliver said, standing up and holding his mace like he was about to hit the man.
You got a problem with it?
Yeah, I got a problem,
Elizabeth asked, eyes glaring as she took her medicine ball out.
Nope, was just asking,
the man answered, looking at the mace with a measure of fear and Elizabeth's medicine ball with confusion. He shrugged as if his inquiry weren't a big deal.
Just wanted to make sure we're all on the same page, all of us have to work together and whatnot.
Good. Then let's get back to our positions, Nick said. I need an account of all melees in front. Before that portal opens, though, start building makeshift ramparts. Throw some obstacles between us and them. Archers and mages, you need to stay in the back, but I need you all to coordinate so the firepower at the center, middle, and left is the same. Also, we're going to need 3 people on medic duty. 1 middle, 1 right, 1 left. Adele, Betty, you 2 set up a central healing station behind us.
Nick really didn't know what else to say. Even in the past, he had always been the grunt. He had always kept the line and followed orders any time he had been allowed to partake in one of these large battles. But giving orders for a fight this large was entirely different.
His brain kept racing as he tried to think about how to handle it best when an idea struck him.
Actually, Arnold, Oliver, while the rest of them build ramparts, I want you 2 to start digging a giant hole in front of the portal with your weapons. Don't waste too much aura on it, but make those bastards drop when they appear. Maybe we can throw a few spears in too if we have time. Let's make them fight an uphill battle. If there isn't a high ground, let's make one.
I have the high ground, Anakin,
Betty joked.
Feels wrong to make that joke in this freezing environment, Reggie remarked with a laugh. Guys, focus. We don't have long. You can goof around after we come out of this alive, Nick told them.
For a moment, it looked like he could see a blue and gold glow coming from the standard's colors, but he brushed the thought aside as he went to work helping the other melee fighters build the barrier to help slow the next wave. Even as he worked, he could feel the timer ticking down.
Nick, look!
Alan shouted as he pointed to the portal, his red glow pulsing as it began to expand again.
I think more are going to be coming through soon.
Freaking.
Positions! Everyone, get to your positions!
Nick yelled as he rushed back to the spot where he'd planted his standard, the blood-stained flag waving in the icy wind.
Chapter 31. As the defenders rushed back to their assigned positions, Nick quickly assessed their work. The barricade they had built was nearly 4 feet tall, made from dozens of steel rebar beams shoved into the ground in front of them with blocks of concrete debris stacked up behind the rebar. What was most impressive was the pit, which was at least a dozen feet deep right beneath the portal. While it didn't have any spikes or the like inside it, it was still a 12-foot drop with an almost vertical slope up toward the defenders' positions. The fact that the hole had been dug out by only 2 people in the course of a few minutes was incredibly impressive. Pleased with the barricades and pit, Nick looked at the rest of the formations. Behind him, and a little to the left, he could see Adele and Clarissa doing their best to set up a first aid zone. One of the Daedalus Guild members, or at least someone who had access to the website, must have helped them as they had used ice magic to create flat, smooth, raised surfaces out of ice to act as beds with several layers of thick cloth on top to keep the patient from freezing. It was the best makeshift aid station Nick could have hoped for. It had at least a dozen beds for a worst-case scenario, though Nick struggled to imagine a world where all those beds would be filled with people because they didn't just die fighting.
All right, we're in position, Nick. You ready?
Siawa asked as she stood in front of him, spear in hand.
We're going to need the magic stuff.
The magic stuff? Oliver asked.
He's got a spell that makes you really focus on nothing but the fight and boosts all your skills. That and the banner, and anyone can go from being an average person to an elite fighter, Alan explained.
Oh, I remember. He used it at the last gate. Yeah, give us the magic stuff, boss,
Oliver enthusiastically demanded.
Yes, give us the magic stuff,
Topaz seconded with an impish grin. I would, Nick began, already working the magic of pep talk. But I don't need to. A grave danger hangs over this land. Our people are dying in the streets, our homes are being torn asunder, and every ounce of reason and sensibility has probably told you to run already, to flee, to drop your weapons and make for the hills. But here you stand. There aren't many of us here, not because there aren't many adventurers and dungeon divers in the city, but because the strength it takes to stay here, even when death is quite literally knocking at that door. He paused, pointing to the expanding portal. You all have stood firm. You want me to cast my spell? To give you courage? To give you the strength to fight them? Why should I? When you're overflowing with it already. You all are the best of the best, the finest defenders this city has to offer. And when the dust settles, and when the danger is past, and you're sitting back at home in your comfortable warm beds, you'll know that it wasn't my words that inspired you. It wasn't my spells that made you great. It was the choices you made, the fear you overcame on your own, and the fortitude you showed in the face of insurmountable odds, Nick declared to them, raising the banner into the air as high as he could as he wove the last bits of the charisma spell upon them. Whether the 30 to 40 people around him clapped, cheered, booed, gritted their teeth, or just ignored him, Nick couldn't tell. The moment he finished working the spell, he had a brief vision wash over him. For just a moment, he could see himself not as Nick inspiring his guild and the people of the city, but as the Black Witch, standing in front of a mob of pitchfork-wielding peasants about to face off against a tide of monsters. She was saying roughly the same thing to them. He could feel the way in which she worked her magic as she continued to reinforce the crowd. It was a short vision, but it was an eye-opening one. He heard his words through her mouth, and he began to understand her that much more. The Black Witch had weaved her words in a way that made the people believe the fight was their decision, their choice. She had, with charisma-based magic, forced them to the battlefield, made them carry their weapons to what very well could have been a slaughter, and compelled them to fight to the death. But no one knew that it was her that had made those decisions for them. They thought they had made the choices themselves, and in believing that, they had possessed that much more conviction in their cause. These were not serfs pushed to the front of the line by an uncaring noble to be meat shields. They were human beings, fighting for a cause they believed in with all their heart, and that difference was all it took to transform them into the zealots that stood before her. As the vision faded, Nick stood once more in front of the pulsing red portal, the battle about to erupt at any minute. A set of notifications popped up in front of him, promising him victory in the fight to come.
Congratulations! Pep Talk has evolved into Pep Talk 2. Pep Talk now inspires all individuals within a 37.4-foot radius with an unnatural, magical surge of confidence. Their abilities and skills will improve by 74.8% for 374 seconds. Congratulations! Cloak of Madness has evolved into Cloak of Madness 2. Cloak of Madness 2 is now an aura, affecting all those within 37.4 feet of the caster. As long as the aura is maintained, the spell will continuously eat at the caster's mana, taking 1% of his current remaining mana every 10 seconds. This effect will continue until the caster's mana reaches 10% or lower, or the caster ends the effect manually. Those under the effect of Cloak of Madness will now have all of their non-charisma-based stats improved by 5%.
Nick couldn't help but feel like it was a boon from the heavens, a gift wrapped up and delivered by the Black Witch herself in their moment of need. But before he could celebrate or share the effects with Siowa, a loud, high-pitched roar sounded from the stretched-out portal as 25-foot-long bodies shot out of it toward the group, each of the creatures shooting long billows of icy breath at the gathered defenders. The cold was so intense that even with Topaz's temperature resistance, two of the dungeon divers were frozen on the spot, and the first aid team got to work quickly as they grabbed them and began hauling them back to the medical tent. Even as the arrows began to fly, three of the polar drakes exploded in a fiery inferno as they were struck with holy fire, but then the rest of the monsters began to pour out of the portal too, beginning a fresh wave of glacial hoppers, ice shard wisps, and frostling imps. But this time, the imps and wisps all fell one on top of the other into the pit. Nick watched them crush each other beneath the weight of their bodies, some even impaling themselves on the spiky protrusions of the creatures beneath them. It only took a second for the bodies to build up high enough that the new ones exiting the portal could just run across the old ones rushing toward the line of defense. Only the skittish hoppers avoided a straight charge as they tried to run around to the flanks of the defenders, even catching one off guard as it leapt up, quickly reaching the man's face before he could cover it with a shield and beginning to gnaw and tear at his flesh, the screams only stopping once his companion was able to skewer the creature and pull it off with his spear.
Alan, Siowa, if anyone has mana left, get some holy fire in under the entrance to clear out the hole,
Nick ordered as he saw the urgency of stemming the tide of horrific creatures.
Let the archers finish off the drakes. If we can burn the monsters fast enough, we can slow the wave.
What the heck? How does everyone know magic?
One of the swordsmen on the front line said as he watched the members of the Daedalus Guild around him pause when possible to throw some holy fire at the pit so that the advantage Arnold and Oliver created wouldn't be lost. As the battle heated up, the enemies continued to pour out of the gate, and Nick began to feel the effect of his title, Hundredfold Victor, kicking in. His physical, mental, and magic stats grew with every additional monster that rushed toward him, a reminder that many of the enemies within the pile of foes under the portal were still alive.
Hold the line!
Nick yelled, rushing toward a spot where one of the fighters was backing up, a gash across his arm and fear in his eyes. He looked like he might break ranks and flee from the tide of monsters even under the effect of Nick's Cloak of Madness, too. Nick rammed his standard straight into a razor-clawed glacial hopper and knocked it off the fighter, giving him enough time to collect himself as Nick used Healing Touch to patch up the gash on the man's arm as quickly as he could. Looking up as he finished healing, he realized that this man wasn't the only adventurer struggling. There were a few others, and if he allowed the situation to fester, there would be breaks in the line that could cost the entire formation. What would future Maria do? He wondered as his mind raced as fast as it could, looking for a solution, but there just wasn't a clear-cut one in front of him. It would have probably stayed that way too if he hadn't noticed that Siowa had left formation to help the right flank out.
That's right. The Romans had a whole line of soldiers, and they used to cycle troops out often.
Nick recalled as he saw Siowal rush across the battlefield, shooting like an arrow into one of the frostling imps that had crawled up the shield wall with a sharp shard of ice in its hand. The imp reached the lip of the shield and was about to leap onto the man holding it up when Siowal's spear stabbed it through the chest. The creature sneered at her, then froze solid as it died, shattering as she swung her spear to knock off another imp that had tried the same climbing maneuver.
We've got about 30 people here. 5 or 6 are occupied with keeping people alive, dragging them to the medics, and about 5 are archers. That leaves us with a 20-person line. If we space people just a bit more, we can move to a 15-person line, and we can have the remaining 5 float.
Nick started doing the math in his head. It was a risky gambit because anyone moving or switching spots in the middle of a fight could cause a break in the line and kill the whole team off. But it was one he needed to take if they were going to make it through. There were just too many enemies pouring toward them, and he alone wasn't going to be enough to hold them at bay. He looked over for a moment and saw Christina, who had helped him in this capacity before, and then Elizabeth, who, despite her competence as a melee fighter, had the medicine ball accuracy of a range combatant in a dire situation. Lastly, he thought about Reggie, whose rapid use of the armoring spell might be able to turn things around or save someone in a dire moment. With those names in his mind, as well as Siowa, who was already acting the part even without prompting, he rushed forward to free Christina from battle. "Christina," he said as he used the blunt end of his standard to smash the hopper that tried to attack her from her right while she killed 3 others to her left.
"I need you to take reinforcement duty, just like the Ghost Town raid. If you see a weak spot, help the bastard out. And you too, tighten up just a bit. It might be rough for now, but you can do it,"
Nick told Christina and the people on either side of her as he started to change their spacing. Christina hesitated as she used her shield to slice apart an enemy even as they talked. He could tell by her hesitation she wasn't sure about the order.
"But if I leave, then..."
"Christina, I need you," he told her once more. And with that, she understood.
It took a minute to free her from her post and reorganize the lines, but after he got it done, he moved on to Elizabeth next, and then Reginald. Then he took his place once more with the others as he acted as an interceptor. With his charge ability and the long length of his lance-like standard, he was able to function nearly perfectly in the needed capacity, the bladed end of his standard stabbing into enemies and freeing up whoever needed it before he would rush to the back and repeat. He felt like a cavalry knight as he continued to perform the same back-and-forth charge motion over and over again, but the plan was working perfectly. Within no time, all the drakes had been killed, and the mages were chugging blue potions as the archers helped Nick and his little assistant squad with protecting the line by targeting larger enemies.
"That's it! We got this! We can hold it until the boss!"
Nick yelled, cheering on his companions as he saw the enemy numbers continue to whittle down, the final enemy coming out of the portal as it was greeted by a sharp arrow to the face.
"That's it. We can... We just need to prepare for the boss now. He should be..."
Nick suddenly felt something tug at his mind.
"Nick, we need to..."
Spencer began, but a melodic wail cut him off as something new came through the portal. Nick turned, his standard ready to face this new threat. But he could not see what it was. He only heard its song piercing the air. The battlefield fell silent but for the haunting harmony of the song. Nick felt his senses dull, his mind clouded by a hypnotic trance as the silky notes wrapped around him like tendrils of ice. He shook his head, trying to regain his focus, but the enchanting melody continued to weave its spell. In that moment, as the world around him blurred and shifted, Nick felt a strange sensation wash over him. It was like falling into a warm embrace, a familiar feeling that tugged at his heartstrings. And suddenly, the world around him changed, shifting into something else as the grim, cold battlefield he had been on was replaced by a field of vibrant wildflowers swaying in the gentle breeze.
Chapter 32. Nick was confused for a moment as a warm summer breeze rolled over him, making the flowers in the field sway like waves on the ocean. The warmth on his skin made him look down, and he noticed that he was wearing jeans and a t-shirt from his favorite band. He somehow felt that he should be wearing something else, something with more protection. But for the life of him, he couldn't remember why.
"Honey, how long have you been out here?"
Nick heard a familiar voice ask him. Turning around, he saw a woman, and all thoughts of more protection fled his mind. She approached, her graceful steps gliding effortlessly through the meadow. Her hair cascaded down in waves of golden silk, shimmering with hints of copper in the sunlight. She had a radiant smile on her face, and her eyes sparkled with a look that warmed him more than the summer day. He had missed her for longer than he had known her. Isabel had been his everything until her death, and the years after had been harder than he could ever put into words. And yet there she was, standing in front of him, giving him the warmest smile he had ever seen. "Isabel," Nick said, a flood of memories of the woman he'd loved washing over him as the words left his mouth.
"You must have slept too long up here. Your hair is all messy and the back of your shirt is covered in dirt. Come on, let's dust you off and go get something to eat,"
she told him.
"I've been waiting on you for dinner."
Isabel approached Nick and wrapped her arms around him, her touch like a gentle breeze as he stood there in the bright hot sun. In her embrace, he felt a tranquil peace, a completeness that he had never known before. She pressed her forehead against his, their breaths mingling as they shared a moment of pure connection.
Why am I here, though?"
Nick asked, breaking the hug for a moment as he stared at the woman in front of him.
"Why are you here? I told myself I wouldn't find you. That I couldn't bury you twice. It was too hard the first time,"
he thought, his mind struggling to remember why he hadn't visited her once since his regression. It wasn't on purpose at first. When he was 18 and still in high school, she had been 3 years older and in college halfway across the world. It wouldn't be until some time after the Red Death that her parents would drag her home to a local school, afraid she might die from some dungeon break where they couldn't help her. That was where Nick, in his last life, would meet her and begin their courtship. The thought of the Red Death caused a sharp pain in his head and an odd sense that something wasn't right.
"Somewhere else. I'm supposed to be somewhere else. A fight. A dungeon, I think."
"What are you talking about, Nick? The dungeon breaks? We fought those. We won. The world might not have many people left, but it has us. And it has hope."
Isabel frowned, looking less disappointed and more concerned as she stared at Nick.
"You're still stuck in the war, aren't you? You're still fighting the good fight, aren't you? That's my Nick, but it's over. You need to let go, dear."
"What do you mean it's over? I'm still... I was still..."
Nick struggled to remember the fight he had been in just moments ago.
"It's okay. Come on, give me a kiss and let's head home,"
Isabel said, leaning forward, her hands touching his arm as he felt the warmth spread across him. Nick's gaze wavered as conflicting emotions warred within him. He had craved this moment, this respite from the constant struggle and sacrifice. But deep down, he knew that it was wrong somehow. As she leaned in to kiss him, he recoiled, not letting their lips meet as thoughts of Sioa filled his mind at the last second.
"No, this isn't right,"
Nick told himself, pushing himself away from her.
"No. Isabel died. Who are you?"
"So you still won't let go of reality?"
The woman's radiant smile never left her face as she laughed.
"I'm rest, Nick. I'm the peace you desperately desire. It's okay to forget. It's okay to walk away. You fought hard, but the fighting can end now. Just come give me a kiss,"
she insisted once more as she stepped forward, her red lips looking more than inviting. But he remained firm, pushing her back, now more certain than ever that something was wrong.
"Nick, just let go,"
the woman gently pleaded one more time, her arms stretched out as she went for another embrace, her inviting lips tempting him. As illogical as it seemed, he could somehow feel that she really was rest. That if he just accepted her, he could close his eyes and be done with everything. With the war, with the struggle, with the day-to-day lifting that tortured every muscle of his body into pushing itself harder. But he knew that, if he did, it wasn't just the war he'd be letting go. It'd be his friends. The Walters, the guildmates that he'd come to care for and rely on. And most importantly, Sioa. Just the thought of her gave him the determination he needed as he did an act he never knew he'd have the mental fortitude to pull off, grabbing the woman's head and snapping her neck, dropping her corpse on the ground. It hurt to do it, and he hated himself for having to, but as he broke her neck, he also fractured the illusion that had enthralled him. As the dream world vanished, the biting cold of the eternal frost-hold dungeon once more washed over him, the flower-covered hills fading into the snow-covered ground before him, now glistening in the pale light from the icy remains of the monster corpses that lay in heaps in front of the defenders. And there, at his feet, was an unmoving translucent body, glistening with frost, its dead eyes pitch black with no sclera, staring wide with surprise. Long, slender, barbed tendrils draped limply from the sides of its face, each appendage exuding an icy chill as if touched by the frosty breath of winter itself. A moment later, the body crystallized like it had been flash-frozen, and then shattered. Nick's eyes went wide as he recognized the monster. A glacial siren. His heart pounded in his chest as he saw everyone around him slumped on the ground, their weapons lowered and their eyes glazed over. The siren's song had ensnared them, and long icy tendrils extended to each person, stealing their life essence as more of the monsters floated closer and closer, threatening to consume them like the bewitching predators they were.
No!
Nick shouted, the only one to have broken free from the siren's spell. He gritted his teeth and charged forward, his standard raised high. With every ounce of willpower he possessed, Nick focused on the faces of his comrades and the lives they fought to protect. The icy tendrils of the siren's song clawed at him, but he shook off their enchantment. Nick concentrated his energy and focus with every fiber of his being on one singular task, helping those around him wake up. He bellowed,